Welcome to Wise at Work, the podcast exploring the intersection of science, culture, and meaning in the workplace. I'm Corey Smith, the CEO of Wisdom Labs, and your host. In this episode, I talk with Richard Miller. Richard Miller, PhD, is a founding president of the Integrative Restoration Institute and co-founder of the International Association of Yoga Therapists. Among his many publications are Yoga Nidra, The Meditative Heart of Yoga, the iRest Program for Healing PTSD, and iRest Meditation. Richard has devoted his life and teachings to integrating the principles of Western psychology and neuroscience with the ancient non-dual wisdom teachings of yoga, tantra, Advaita, Taoism, Buddhism, and Judeo-Christian traditions. He consults on research and leads meditation retreats and trainings internationally. And now, Richard Miller. Richard, you've been working with resilience in lots of different environments, and in the workplace or in the military or in healthcare environments. What does resilience mean to you?
A simple definition, it is the ability to know what to do in the moment so that you feel you have the skills within you to navigate whatever it is you're experiencing, and that you're able to move through that situation with a sense of interconnectedness, inner harmony. I would also say outer connectedness with the environment or the people you're in contact with. So resiliency creates an inner sense of stability, ground, foundation at a very bodily level. This is not intellectual. You're actually feeling this sense of core ground. We could be in a very difficult, challenging situation because I do work with veterans who are out in the field and they're using these skills in the midst of what we would call a life-threatening situation in a firefight. And they're able to come back and say, I felt grounded. I felt able to navigate the difficulty in the moment. We may not find ourselves in that kind of situation, but recently with hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, the floods that have been happening, the fires that we see happening in the world, and then the kind of political situations, economic situations we find ourselves in. To know that you have the skill to navigate whatever life throws at you, that creates an inner sense of stability and confidence. So resiliency, in a way, another way of saying it is it's an inner resource we all possess. It's innate to all of us. We just need to build the muscle, we might say, of the skills with which then we can apply in any given moment.
Well, that's a beautiful description of resiliency. We hear a little bit about resiliency now and in the context of slight skepticism in some areas about resiliency, because on the surface level, I just need to buckle down more. I need to have more grit, if you will. And what you're describing there is something completely different.
It's very different. Grit can keep us held hostage, I would say, by our conditioned responses in this, what we call the default network, where we're relying on old patterns. In order to navigate something that's new coming at us, we can't just rely on old conditioned habits and patterns. We need to have access to new information. And grit can often prevent us from seeing the information we're needing to access. So people who are resilient, they talk about having a sense of openness. They're open to the information that's coming in. They're able to respond in a fresh way, not just by old learning and old responses that they've had in the past. So part of resiliency is, in a way, a quality of spontaneity, authenticity, that we're really truly meeting the moment in a harmonious manner. It's not to say we're not accessing old habit patterns and old conditioning and old thoughts, but we're open to the new.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned, and I've heard in your recordings, that every experience, whether positive or negative, is a message or a messenger. What does that mean exactly?
Life has given us a body with sensations, emotions, thoughts, every thought, every emotion, we actually register, every image, every perception is registered in the body as a sensation. So at a very primal level, sensations give us information. If I'm putting my hand near a hot stove, I'm receiving feedback that I better be careful, I better be alert, because I've oriented and learned about those kinds of sensations. Every emotion, whether it's happiness, sadness, grief, irritation, anger, whatever, is basically, from my perspective, arriving in our body as a messenger to help us navigate it. We all know when we lose someone dear to us, we will go through a period of grief. Grief is a natural response to stepping back, integrating the experience, and if we're really willing to be open to the grief and all the emotions that it brings, we will move through it naturally. It's the same thing with anger. Anger, say, when it's arriving, is usually showing us that the way we want reality is different from the way reality is showing up. We're having an expectation that's creating the sense of anger. If we understand anger as a messenger, we can immediately, as we're experiencing it, start asking ourselves, what's the expectation I have of this person or this moment that it should be other than it is, but it is the way it is. So let me try to see, how can I meet it from the what is? I'll give you an immediate situation. I was trying to catch a plane. I arrived at the gate and the stewardess slammed the door in front of me to the plane. And I'm looking at her through the window and saying, you know, open the door. And she said, no, I'm sorry. Once the door's shut, it's shut. I turned to the attendant next to her who was on the outside of the door. And I said, is there another plane to San Francisco? And she said, yeah, it's just a couple of doors down. I started running down and I ended up catching the plane with like 5 minutes to spare. Well, as that door shut in front of me, there was another guy who started going into a temper tantrum. Me, I was feeling the irritation and the upset, but I was also open to the possibility. So it didn't control me. I had that sense of well-being and resiliency. I caught the plane. He didn't. I left him back there having a temper tantrum that the door had been shut and he had missed the opportunity of the possibility of a new flight. I've seen this in so many countless situations. We're learning these kinds of skills to meet the immediacy of the moment. So every emotion, sensation, like pain. Pain's a warning signal. We need to stop, listen to it. We're often enculturated immediately to take some remedial medication like aspirin or ibuprofen. No, I want to stop first and register. It's a sign. It's a symptom. What might it be pointing to me? I was teaching one time and a woman had a, during the session we were in, teaching the IRS, she had a little feeling in her kidney. And I had her really stop, attend to it, listen to it, and became more and more of a discomfort. Well, she ended up going to the doctor and on my advice, and the doctor told her she was in the very earliest stage of kidney failure. If she had not registered that sensation, she would have eventually gone into kidney failure. So it's important to look at emotions, thoughts, sensations as messengers, not that we're trying to get rid of the messenger, but actually invited in, I call for tea and conversation, to hear why of all the people right now are you in my life as anger, irritation, pain, discomfort? What's the action you need me to take that would be in harmony with you so that I move through this situation with ease and dignity and harmony rather than in a reactive mode? You know, at a practical level, what I often see people doing is they're willing to invite in the messenger if it'll go away. And that's not really what I call welcoming. Welcoming means really inviting the messenger in, whether it's a disturbing thought, image, memory, emotion, sensation, and taking the time to really listen to it as an ally and a friend. And then we befriend these messengers so that when they show up, we're really attentive to them.
Mm-hmm. Stress seems to be the number one thing in the workplace. And by all indications in the U.S. especially, we're now at an all-time high of people self-reporting that they're stressed in the workplace. The last stats I saw was 83% of the people report being stressed in the workplace. And I was wondering what you would say to a manager or a leader in an organization about what they need to know about stress.
stress, if we look at it, when somebody's under long-term stress, they begin to lose touch in a way with themselves. They start to feel a bit disconnected from themselves, and that can lead over to feeling disconnected with the people around themselves. So one of the main tools I want to help people understand is we all have within us a sense of well-being that can be a vital inner resource or foundational touchstone. If we can stay in touch with this inner quality of well-being as we go through our day and keep weaving it into each situation, we have a strong foundation with which to navigate any stressful situation, no matter how it comes at us. So I think of how do we help people understand this innate aspect that we all possess within us, and then how to help them mine it to the surface in their own life so that they're feeling it all day long. So this, what I call an inner sense of well-being, no matter the circumstance or the situation they find themselves in.
Well, I know, having listened to your 20-minute iRest meditation that you have on your website, which we'll provide in the show notes as a link to, that's been very helpful to get to that place of tapping into your own sense of well-being. Mm-hmm. And I think you do that masterfully in that 20-minute meditation. But could you explain kind of how you lead people to understanding that they have this place inside them that they always can go to as the touch point?
Yes. We all know what it's like to have a moment of easing back. I think of it as a momentary timeout where we're between two doings. We're between, in a way, two thoughts or two breaths. And when we ease back into that sense of simple being and we explore the qualities that it brings to the surface within our body, feelings like a sense of peace, ease, well-being. Many times I've heard when I've introduced to people a sense of coming home to themselves. So I work a lot with veterans who've been under tremendous stress, and they say this is the first time they feel like they've actually come back home to themselves. So it's helping people first take a moment of time out, ease back, and then I have a series of questions or inquiries that I help take a person through so they can feel this innate sense that it's familiar. They've always known it, but it's been relegated into the background of their lives. As they begin to see how important it can be, because it brings this deep sense of well-being to the forefront in their body, so it's a somatic felt sense. It's not just an intellectual understanding. And then to show them how to weave it into when they're feeling different stressful movements, particular emotions that they might be experiencing, particular body sensations like pain or discomfort that they're feeling. As they learn how to weave it in on a moment-to-moment or day-to-day basis, they begin to feel they're building a muscle of resiliency with which then they can take into any situation they're finding themselves, whether it's in the workplace, family place, or day-to-day life situations. I have found it takes about 15 to 20 minutes to introduce a person to this innate sense of well-being. I've yet to find anybody who can experience it, who hasn't been able to experience it. The simplicity of it is, I think, what is the challenge. It's so simple that people often will dismiss it. So what I try to teach is an ongoing course where they're learning how to first experience it and then value it and then integrate it into their daily lives and come to value it more and more and more.
Mm-hmm. For anybody that is interested in checking this out, it seems to be a great path. And the path maybe that I took first when I was introduced to the IRS 20-minute free meditation on your site, and then learned maybe about a half a year later that there was this Wonderful Sounds True program that really unpacks that 20 minutes and starts to get behind all of the elements there. When I first heard your 20-minute meditation, I immediately thought of it's the Swiss Army knife of meditations, in the sense that it's beautifully compact, but not too compact. And as you open it up, each has its own sense of utility. And it's been really thoughtfully put together.
These are simple tools. These are easy to learn, easy to integrate. I like the adage, little and often throughout our day, we just take these 30-second little well-being breaks, which we can do in the midst of a meeting we're in the moment of having a stressful emotion. We can take an internal break. People on the outside may not know what we're doing, but we know what we're doing. They're simple to learn, easy to integrate into our life.
You touched on something that I think would be really helpful for people is, imagine you are in a meeting and it's a stressful moment. You've got a big emotion coming up. What would be a way that you could touch in for that 30 seconds? What would be an actual skill that you might be able to?
Well, here's a very simple skill. And actually, I was using it in a stressful situation the other day when I was sitting in the dentist chair. And you who are listening to this, just take a moment and bring your attention into one of your hands. Just sense your hand, which you can do while you're in the midst of a conversation or in the midst of having an emotion. Then bring your attention over to your other hand. So you're enlivening the sensation in your hands. Then you want to feel both hands at the same time. So this doesn't take much of a skill except that ability to recognize sensation in your hands. What's interesting, and the neuroscience shows this out, when we experience two opposites of sensation, say in the palms of our hands, and we're having a difficult moment, it actually deactivates a part of our nervous system, a part of our brain, which is called the default mode network. We step out of recursive negative thinking, and we turn on a whole nother part of our nervous system, the present-centered network, which opens us up to insight and possibilities we would otherwise not have if we're just trapped in the emotion. So the emotion in that moment can be hijacking us. As simple as an intervention of sensing your two hands while you're experiencing the emotion opens you to insight and a possible response in the moment rather than a reactive knee-jerk response, so that we can navigate the moment and come up with a response that is in harmony, I would say, with the moment. And just to go back to the dentist chair, I'm sitting there, he's drilling away. I'm feeling both hands, then both my feet. I'm taking a vacation in sensation. And the dentist and his assistant are saying, I don't know what you're doing here, but we really like it because you're probably the best patient we've had all day long because you seem so relaxed in the midst of this moment. And that's what I was feeling, a sense of relaxation in the midst of the stressful environment. But I've done this on many occasions when I'm having a strong emotion from a communication I might be having with myself and my spouse or with somebody at the workplace. I'm feeling both hands, feeling my feet, and it gives me a sense of well-being in the midst of the activity that keeps me grounded and moving through the situation so that when I come away from it, I really did feel I navigated it in a very harmonious, helpful manner, and I didn't react even though there were those movements happening where a reaction wants to happen, but I'm not being held hostage by them.
So you've been bringing a form of these practices into all types of different environments since the 70s. And ultimately, what's it all about? How is this going to translate into some kind of positive change? And on what level do you see it happening? And also just what have you seen between the 1970s and your work there all the way to where we are now in our current environment and the necessity for the work we do?
If I were to sum up what I feel I'm doing when I'm teaching these skills to the people I work with, and whether they're in military settings, corporate, or they're just in everyday lives, is I feel like I'm helping people become truly human beings, good, kind, responsive, so that when we sit with one another, we're really learning how to listen and have true dialogue. Often we see people getting polarized in their dialogue. These are skills that are helping us stay open to the person who is in front of us or the situation that's in front of us, so that we can really navigate it. So I think on one level, I'm helping people become a good human being, responsive, ability to navigate any situation. We're given these innate skills, but we're never often given the owner's manual when we're young. I think of IREST as the owner's manual we never got.
Is there anything else when we think about the workplace in general and what skills and offerings you've been brought that you'd like to just kind of add to the conversation? Is there anything that I haven't discussed that you may have in mind that feels incomplete?
I think in entering into any placement, whether it's a workplace or wherever, it needs to be a top-down skill building. In other words, I love working with higher management, teaching them the skills where then they know the power and the value that then they're willing to bring it to people under them, the employees. And they're also modeling the skills that they've learned. Whenever I've come into a workplace where it's a bottom up, I'm teaching the people at the lower levels first. It's very difficult then for it to trickle up into management and have a much wider experience. That's where I've often had to start, so I'm willing to start there. But ultimately, I would like to see higher management, executives understanding these skills themselves, seeing the power and the effect they have in their lives, and then realizing this is something they need to pass on to their employees.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Richard.
Thank you, Corey. This has been a wonderful conversation. I deeply appreciate being here with you.
Likewise. Hi, it's Corey, co-founder and CEO of Wisdom Labs. At Wisdom Labs, we're helping companies become wiser workplaces. To create this positive impact in organizations, we cultivate change at the level of the individual, team, and company culture. We see businesses as the biggest lever for positive social change at scale. After all, business still holds the most power and influence in our world, and as individuals, company cultures, and entire stakeholder networks become more wise, we all benefit. To learn more about Wisdom Labs, check out wisdomlabs.com. Thanks for listening.